and go good. I'm ready.
Log Talk Radio.
Okay, computer.
Okay. Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. It's freezing outside, but this show is going to really get you pumped and moving. This is MJ Network, and I am your host. This is Fran Lewis, and I am so excited. Cindy McDonald is here, and we're going to talk about Mambo and Murder. Now, I can identify with Nathan Landry and his problems because I was the biggest klutz when I used to dance, and I really hated dancing school. So anybody that feels bad or yells at him because he can't dance, it doesn't matter, but he's cute. So he's a really great, he's not a great ballroom dancer, but he's a great police officer. And so what if he has two left feet? But Fiona Quinn is right by his side. So good morning. How you doing?
Hi, Fran. How are you today?
I'm hanging in there. No problem. We're getting there finally. So Fiona Quinn is really cool. And she's one of my favorite characters. So how did you create her? And, you know, as an educator, she's, you know, really great because that's me. And why a kindergarten teacher, which is really cool?
Well, originally, years ago, I don't remember what year it must have been, 2014 or 15, I decided to write children's books for my grandchildren, and that's how the George the Pony books came around. Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, children have a tendency to grow, and they grew out of the George mm-hmm. the Pony books. And so my one granddaughter came to me and asked me if she could read the first Force books. And at the time, she was 10, and as you know, the first Force books are not children material. So I mm-hmm. thought, you know what, I can write something that anybody can read. I've got to just sit down. So I was reading Cozy Mysteries at the time, and I thought, you know, I can write one of these. So Fiona Quinn just started to hatch inside my head, and I wanted a lovable character. I wanted someone people could relate to, someone who was sweet but flawed and maybe a little klutzy, and she gets flustered, as you know. She gets very flustered, and when that happens, she mm-hmm. Gets a little bit of verbal diarrhea. And she, as far as a kindergarten teacher, I thought, now, I was setting this whole thing in my hometown of Pittsburgh, and she lives in the home that I grew up on in Oxford Street in a little neighborhood called Westwood, and right there is Westwood Elementary School. So I decided to make her a kindergarten teacher because kindergarten students can be very, very entertaining. And so I was a dance teacher for many years, and I remember, you know, my situations with some of the preschool and kindergarten children and things that they would just say. You know, they're just blatantly honest. And I thought, well, I won't always use her students, always use her classroom, but when I do, I will make these students extremely fun. Just do things to Fiona that just really takes her aback, and she has to, you know, get through the little situation. So that's why I chose a kindergarten teacher.
Well, from all those people who have children in kindergarten, like my little nephew, they are energetic,
uh-huh.
and also extremely smart. But, yeah, my dancing teachers felt sorry for themselves when I was done dancing on Saturday morning. And at times I felt sorry for them, too, because they had I was smart. I can remember the steps, but my feet didn't remember them at all. And, yeah, it came to a point where I had to make a deal with one of the teachers, and I'm saying, if I can remember all the steps for tap dancing, can I please play the piano for everybody during the show so I don't have to dance? So I, you know, had to dance part time, but they let me play in Carnegie Hall. So I was happy. So we have Evelyn, my other favorite character. How come you decided to have her spirit come alive in each story, and there are times when everybody could use one of her, seriously.
Well, as you know, I think I've written in some of the books, in the back of the book, a note from C.S. MacDonald, that Evelyn Burrell was my actual grandmother. And when I was growing up on Oxford Street, it was my grandfather, my mother's father, who lived in our attic apartment, and he was kind of a cranky old guy, and so he was not nearly as fun as Grandma Ev was. And so I just decided, you know what, this is a way for me to reconnect with my grandmother. I loved her. I adored her so. She had a huge sense of humor, and she was somebody who got herself into fixes. And and some of the stories she told us was just hysterical, things that happened to her. And while I didn't want the focus of the Cozy Mysteries to be paranormal, because I'm not a paranormal writer, I thought that having a ghost in the house, just to kind of make little, she doesn't actually appear to Fiona, but just do things to help Fiona out, I thought would be fun. And it has turned out, so many people just love Grandma Eva. A lot of people who write reviews always mention her and say how much fun it is to have her in the show, in the stories.
Without a doubt, she is fun to have in the stories. And at times when I'm reading a book, I look up and I go, Grandma Katie, are you there to guide me? Can you get me out of trouble? She was the one that got me. I never got in trouble, but if my mother looked at me cross-eyed, my grandmother would say, don't even think about it. She's perfect. Don't even think about it. And, which was good because, you know, grandmas are the best.
They are.
So,
when I was a kid, I was one of those picky eaters, you know, somebody who didn't like mashed potatoes. And when we would show up for Thanksgiving meal, there would be a huge bowl of spaghetti there just for me because she didn't want me to get in trouble because I wasn't eating the turkey and mashed potatoes. So, yeah, that's how grandmas are.
Yeah, my grandmother made me – everybody had boiled chicken, and I refused to look at boiled chicken. She made me broil chicken. She used to, you know, fix it so that I would actually not look at it and go, oh, my God, what is that? And, yeah, that's what grandmothers are the best. They protect you from everyone. So
that's right.
We have Fiona and Nathan, and they're a couple. So how did they get together? Because he's so cute, though.
We meet both Fiona and homicide detective Nathan Landry in the very first book, Murder on Point. And that's when Fiona goes to the Benedum Center, which is an actual theater in downtown Pittsburgh. And that is the home of the Pittsburgh Ballet Theater. That's where they perform. And she goes downtown to see an old friend, Celia Ramsey, dance in the production of Coppelia. And, of course, after the performance, they go out to eat. And when they come back, one of the principal dancers has been murdered. And, of course, Nathan is the detective who is assigned to the case and shows up, and it is instant chemistry between Fiona and the detective, the very quirky detective. And so from then on, they become a couple, and it's a very it's a sweet relationship. It's cute, it's sweet, and a lot of people have urged me to move their relationship forward. You know, when is Fiona and Detective Landry going to get married? But if I do that, then it's no longer the Fiona Quinn Mysteries, right? It moves on to something else, and I'm just not quite ready to take that step.
No, I could see what you mean. And besides the fact, you know, I've read, I lost count of how many books I've read. My husband said I've read about 9,000.
Marble and Murder was book number 6.
Yeah, I've lost track of everything that I've read, so many. And I find that when an author moves a romance too fast, it becomes fake, and it becomes stilted.
Right.
And then you go like, they're not getting a chance to become, you know, be a person, to get to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you don't want it. Besides the fact, it's a little bit more mystery. Besides, you know, when he was in this particular novel, we thought someone was going to try to steal him, and that's not good either. I think Funny Fiona would come down with him, you know, when those kindergarten kids would stomp on him too. So we have the prologue, and how does that set the stage for murder? So he interviews the person. Tell us that. Well, he interviews the person, And how does this send him on a quest to find a murderer? Because the prologue sort of says everything.
That's the scene, right. First of all, this prologue is, in Mambo and Murder, that is the only book that has a prologue so far. Usually the books just start out with chapter one, and the very first person or character that you see, of course, is Fiona. And in this case, as I was writing the book, I thought, you know, I got to set this up differently. I've got to set the stage differently. So I added a prologue, and it was only added maybe, 3 weeks before the publishing process began on the book. And Nathan is called to a home that has been burgled he's kind of annoyed that he's been called to this home because, of course, he's a homicide detective. So why would he want to be involved in a burglary? Well, when he gets there, his good friend, police officer Wyatt Hayes, informs him that they've listed prints in the home from a man who has been supposedly dead for 40 years and was responsible for 3 murders. So Nathan is called in to interview the daughter of the deceased owner of the home, who is Angelo Moretti. And he asks her, you know, do you know this man? And his name is Vincent DiVellante. And do you know this man? And she says, no, I have no idea who Vincent DiVellante is. And he says, well, hey, his fingerprints are all through your house, your father's house. Well, she lives in Seattle. So she says, I have no idea who this man is. So now he's got a man who has supposedly been dead for 30 years who, you know, was responsible for 3 people's deaths. And so now he sets out to find out where he is. He can't be dead, so somebody else has got to be in that grave. So he's set out to find out, you know, where this man is.
Well, that was, some of those scenes were hilarious, though, trying to get that body out of the ground, whatever. So when we learned that was, I mean, really, when we learned about the dance contest so that he could investigate, he wants to dance with his partner, Tavia, and the poor thing, and then we have Angelina the ballerina. That's hilarious, that name. And what is her impression of Nathan and Tavia? And she doesn't want to teach them anymore, does she? She really doesn't.
No,
really,
well, they start taking ballroom dancing classes because they find out that Vincent DiVellante was a ballroom dancer, and the three men who were murdered were also ballroom dancers. And the focus of the whole thing is a woman named Isadora Danza. And she was a very popular, very famous ballroom dancer. And this Vincent DiVellante wanted to dance with her, but she considered him a mediocre dancer and didn't want to dance with him. So he was one by one eliminating his competition of people who would dance with her. Of course, it goes deeper than that as we move into the story, of course, but that is the original thought. And so Nathan and Tavia have the idea, you know, are going undercover as ballroom dancers to attend these ballroom competition that's coming to Pittsburgh. I believe I called it the Silver Slipper Ballroom Dance Competition. It's coming to the David Lawrence Convention Center, which is actually a place in Pittsburgh. And so they have to take classes because, of course, you know, they don't know how to ballroom dance. Well, when they get into this class with this woman named Angela, he is an absolute disaster in dance shoes. He is stepping on Tavia's feet. He's knocking her down. He's elbowing her in the face. And it really becomes an exercise of self-defense on Tavia's part rather than a dance class. And Angela, the dance teacher, is so disgusted by them both because they have no talent, and she cannot figure out why they're even taking ballroom dancing classes. And so as it turns out, poor Tavia, of course, ends up with a broken ankle. And because of him, he steps on her foot as they're trying to turn, and she does a 360 turn with him holding onto her foot, and she breaks her ankle very, very badly. So, of course, now Tavia can no longer participate in the investigation. Now, Angelina Ballerina is actually a fictional character. They're called the Angelina Ballerina books. They're children's books. She's a little mouse, and I believe there's even little videos of this little mouse. And I just used the name because, you know, Fiona says, "What's the dance teacher's name?" And he's so disgusted by the whole thing. He says, "Angelina Ballerina." I mean, he's just disgusted by the whole thing. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun as they're dancing. And Fiona comes to one of the classes to watch the very beginning, and she's just absolutely appalled at what she's watching, that these two just trip all over each other.
Well, when I read that scene, it reminded me of what I did to the poor ice skating teacher. That was my other fun thing that I hated, that my sister wanted to do. And she did very well, and I weighed like about 100 million pounds, and I fell right on top of the poor guy. He was never the same. At Rockefeller Center in New York City. I did it, and my father didn't. And my father said, you know, the guy said, I'll give you back the money for the lesson. And my no, she's going to finish it. I said, why are you torturing? I must have fallen on this guy about 20 times. I thought, oh my God, I don't think he's ever been the same since. So seriously, I mean, I too bad they didn't have a video. It would have been a riot. But we know they're not going to be on Dancing with the Stars, and they're not going to be on So You Think We Could Dance. Poor thing.
No, so, I'm afraid they won't.
Poor Tavia, who has a broken ankle, she was lucky that was all it was. So what happens that Fiona has to take over? And why would she even subject herself to Dancing with King Klutz? Poor thing. How did he get her to do it? I mean, really.
Well, of course, after Tavia breaks her ankle, that eliminates her from doing anything except for desk work at the police precinct. So he has no partner, and he has to move the investigation forward because the Silver Slipper ballroom competition is quickly coming. And so he turns to the one person who, of course, had studied ballet. He knows she can dance, and, of course, she's his girlfriend, so he pleads with her to take Tavia's place. And poor Fiona keeps telling him, you know, I was a ballerina. Ballerina and ballroom dancing are two totally different styles of dance. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how to ballroom dance. And he says, please help me. And, of course, because she adores this quirky detective, she agrees to step in for Tavia. But, of course, she doesn't come in unarmed. She goes to her old friend, Celia Ramsay, from the very first book, Murder on Point, who is a ballerina, and used to dance ballroom dancing with her cousin in the competitions, and asks her to please help them through this dancing debacle. And because Celia is a good friend, of course, she comes forward and says, well, okay, you know, I'll do this. I'll help you. But and Fiona says to her, well, you know, this is going to be rough. And she says, well, it's going to be rougher for you than me because I'm not dancing with him. You are. So that's how Celia Ramsay gets involved in the dance competition. Well, in the instructor portion of the dance competition, too.
Well, I guess Arthur Murray doesn't have anything to worry about. Seriously.
No, I don't.
In his dance studio. We have one down the block, and not me. So things get more dangerous when we learn about Isadora Danza and Di Valente's sister, who turns up at the cemetery when he's there to exhume the body. Now, that scene had to be hilarious. So why does he want the body in the coffin exhumed? And it says who was supposed to be. So what happens when they exhume? I didn't know if it was a laugh or cry when it got to that part.
Well, now, of course, you know, because this man suddenly has turned up evidently alive, he has to find out who's in that coffin, and so he gets permission to have the body exhumed, of course. So he goes to the cemetery to supervise the removing of the body, and he's standing there, and this woman comes up to him, and she's wearing sunglasses and a scarf over her head, and she's there to visit her parents and her brother's grave, and her parent and her brother, of course, turns out to be Angelo Moretti, who was the man at the very beginning of the book in the prologue that mm-hmm. was the house that was burgled. So, of course, he turns out that he was friends with Vincent Di Volante. And, of course, Isadora is the famous ballroom dancer. So he's having this body exhumed because he doesn't believe that Di Volante is in the coffin. And so, wait a minute. You know, he's talking to her, and she's asking, "Why are you bothering this body? Why are you, you know, mm-hmm. you know, how are?" You know, he explains to her, "Well, you know, we need to exhume this body to make sure that this is the correct body." And so they exhume the body, and of course, we find out it is not Di Volante who is in the coffin, but we don't find out till the very end of the book who is in the the coffin.
Well, we're not going to tell them. They have to read the book.
No.
So we have Lucille Smith. What part does she play? This is interesting. Why did you include the letters being delivered in 1976, and what part of the mystery will that clear up? That was interesting.
Well, very interesting. Lucille Stacy Smith, my grandmother's maiden name was Stacy. Lucille Smith was actually my grandmother's sister. My grandmother had a lot of siblings, you know. And Lucille died very young in a mental institution shortly after the birth of her third child. And this is true. My Aunt Lucille died very, very young. She was only 25, I believe, when she died, and it was directly after the birth of her third child. So the letters from Lucille are being delivered to Fiona's house, and they're long-lost letter. And this, of course, adds to the intrigue of the mystery. And it's a mystery of who's whose. But anyway, the reason that I used these letters was because I actually kind of sort of had this little experience. I was cleaning out a closet back in one of my extra bedrooms, and I came across this bag, and in the bag was old magazines and brochures that for some reason I had thrown in this bag and never threw the bag away. And I thought, what am I doing with this stuff? So I picked up one of the brochures. And you know how brochures are folded over and they kind of have a sticky tab to hold them closed? Mm-hmm. When I pulled the brochure out of the bag, this card fell out. It slid inside this brochure sometime during the sorting methods at the post office. So I looked at the letter and the card, and it was obviously a Christmas card. It was like 5 years old, and it had a forever stamp on it that had not been postmarked because it was inside this brochure. The postmark thing had missed it. So I did not recognize the name on the letter. It wasn't even from a town near me, a totally different zip code and everything. And I said to my husband, I've got to mail this because this person didn't get this Christmas card. And for all I know, this could be the last Christmas card this person received from the sender. I've got to see to it that they get it. So I mailed it. And, of course, I have no idea if they, you know, what happened to it after that. But, of course, this is what brought the intrigue of old letters being delivered to Fiona from 1976. And so that's where the root of that came from. And these letters are coming to her. The first one is a Christmas card, and it's from 1976. Mm. And and Fiona is like, "What? Why am I getting these cards from so long ago? And why are they coming to my house?" Because in 1976, my grandmother didn't live in my house. She had her own house over on Guyland Street. So that's where that came from.
That's so weird. So we know about Lucille, and she was placed in a mental institution. And who is Edward? So why don't we know where he is? And then when Fiona questions the mailman, he's like, he's delivering these. And he didn't even realize, did he realize that they came from 1976? And then he says there's a whole bunch more. Not just those.
So Lucille, like you said, was placed in a mental institution. And Edward Smith was her husband. Now, you have to remember, these are all my relatives, but these people have been dead for a very, very long time. I had to move them forward from many years forward from the decades in which they lived. These people did not live in the 70s. These people were long gone. But anyway, in the letters, Lucille is begging Grandma Ev for help. And Fiona has no idea what kind of help she needed other than the fact that she's sitting in a mental institution. And Edward was her husband, had disappeared many years before, leaving one child, Dick, to be raised by Fiona's grandma when she lived over on Guyland Street. And he had two other children, and they were left with Edward's sister. And then he just took off. He dumped his children on Grandma Ev and his sister, and then he just took off, which is not an unusual thing for a man to do. You know, I mean, you know, many men will do that sort of thing. Not all men, of course. I'm not saying all men. But, you know, men will, you know, I don't know what to do with these kids. And back in the day, way, way long ago, in the 30s and 40s, if a man lost his wife, a lot of those men would place their children in orphanages and move on with their lives because they didn't know what to do with those children. How am I going to work and raise these three little kids? I can't do this. Mm. So this man didn't put them in an orphanage. Rather, he gave one to Grandma Ev and two to his sister to raise. Now, Fiona is like, okay, well, I'm receiving all these old letters, and she finds out that there are people in the neighborhood who are also receiving old letters. And she finds out that the new mailman is the son of a mailman who found the bags in a fruit cellar. And evidently, a mailman from way back in the 70s just became overwhelmed with all the mail. You know, the mail just keeps on coming, Fran. It doesn't matter if it's snowing or, you know, sunny. That mail just keeps coming, and this man just became so overwhelmed that he was hiding some of the mail in the fruit cellar. And this man came across it when he bought the house. So he felt that he should deliver the mail. That some of the people were deceased, but he knew Fiona, because he went to school with Fiona, was Evelyn Burrell's grandmother. So he was delivering the mail to people because he felt as though they should get their mail.
You know, I had a mailman before I moved, and he would do that. And bringing them, and he actually brought my mail up to, but he used to crack up laughing though, because he would say, you know, you got all these letters and stuff, and give me my mother's mail, and my aunt's mail, so that they didn't have to go get it. And then he would say to me, "Do you have any books for me to read?" Seriously.
Yeah, I have a UPS driver that I always give her my books. She loves my books, so I give her my books.
Yeah, I've given them to the UPS guy. I give him anything that he wants to read, and then there are people in the building. I just give them all away, and everybody else too, because you can't keep everything. But
right. There's
a couple of hands out for yours. Trust me, it won't be here much longer. I can tell you that. So, how does she prepare for this dance contest and the dress scene that she didn't want to wear? That would be me. That would be weird.
Well,
I'm not wearing that. It doesn't look right. I mean, how did you? And that was hilarious.
Well, you have to remember, I was a dancer and a dance instructor. So I had to deal with costumes all the time. I mean, costumes, you know, that's just part of your life when you're a dancer and a dance instructor. So, and believe you me, you can't please everybody with costumes. You just can't. But Fiona is, the house that I lived on in Oxford Street in Pittsburgh was a very big old house. It was just big, drafty old house, and it had a big basement. And because Fiona is a single woman, you know, she doesn't have a family, her basement's pretty much wide open because, you know, she doesn't have kids to, you know, be pounding toys and bicycles and whatnot down in her basement. So it's wide open. So they are taking dance classes from Celia down in the basement of this house. And while Fiona and Celia are taking care of the competition details, Nathan, of course, is taking care of the murder details. And this, because Celia was a ballroom dancing competitor when she was young, she still has her costumes. Because those ballroom costumes, I mean, I did a lot of research on ballroom dresses. Mm-hmm. They are super expensive. You don't just take those and give those to the Goodwill. Mm-hmm. They're very expensive things. Mm-hmm. So she still has some of her ballroom outfits, and she brings them along with her. And, of course, the very first one that Fiona tries on is the Mambo costume. And, of course, you know, I looked up the Mambo costumes and made sure, you know, I know exactly what these things look like. And they're pretty skimpy, those Mambo costumes are. I mean, they're very, you know, low cut and backless and short and very – and as we know – our Fiona, the kindergarten teacher, is a very conservative person. She doesn't wear skimpy outfits and things like that. So when she sees Celia produce this red dress that's just cut down, she's like, everybody's going to see everything I own. I can't wear that dress. And so Celia has to do some quick talking to get Fiona into the dress. And then once she gets her into the dress, she has to convince Celia or Fiona that it's going to be okay. You're okay. It it's tight. It's going to be like a piece of skin. So once they get through the Mambo costume, they move into the waltz dress. And, of course, Fiona's much more comfortable in the waltz dress because they're not quite as, you know, skimpy as the Mambo costumes are.
Well, I will tell you that I danced in something that she would not have danced in either. I danced in a smock that had I had tights on and a smock because we were doing The Sorcerer's Apprentice, and I was a mop.
I had a mop
on my head.
Uh-huh.
It was horrible. It was horrible. But fortunately, this mop was ugly green, but it was big. And forget it, I can feel sorry for Fiona. I understand her plight. I would not wear this.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, I mean, costumes can be that way, and costumes.
Yeah.
You know, as a dance instructor, this costume may look fabulous on this girl, but not quite so good on the other girl. So I used to be very, very careful with what I chose because, you know, not everybody has the same shape. So I used to be very, very, very careful with what I used to choose in costuming. So, the
My
poor Fiona, those Mambo costumes are pretty dang skimpy. So.
If my sister was still alive, she'd be able to wear it. I'm thin, but I'm short, but she could wear it. That would be the kind of thing that she would definitely not even have a problem with. And fit into, not a problem. So, do we have the captain of the police force? How does he feel about this case, and how is he proceeding it?
Well,
I have to get to her mother. Oh, my God.
He's very nervous about letting a citizen participate in a murder investigation, but they've got no dancers on their force. You know, he's looking around in the precinct, and you know, none of these female police officers know how to dance. They're not, and here's Fiona. She was a professional dancer at one time, so he tells Detective Landry, "You proceed with great caution. You do not allow anything bad to happen to Fiona Quinn." And, of course, Nathan tells him, I would never let anything happen to my Fiona. I would never let anything happen to her. So, yeah, he's very, very nervous about letting just a regular, everyday Pittsburgh citizen participate in a murder investigation. But he does finally, after some coercing, give the nod. So.
Well, he has to, otherwise he wouldn't find out who did it.
That's right. That's right.
So,
and, of course, it's a cozy mystery.
Yeah.
You know, cozy mysteries.
Yeah.
We take a little bit of, you know, we do things that maybe wouldn't really happen in a police force, but that's what's fun about a cozy mystery, right?
That's right. And before I forget, tomorrow at 10 o'clock, former FBI agent Michael Tamman and me, Fran Lewis, we're going to take on the government shutdown, counterintelligence, investigation into President Trump, and the rising cost of health care and drugs and whatever else comes to mind. And, yes, immigration on the wall. That's the other topic if we can. I'm serious. Be there at 10 because you never know what I'm going to do. So
that's for sure.
on the 21st, I have a Gabriel Vajon, the good man. On the 24th, a very, very interesting book that will bring tears to your eyes if you read it, Chasing the Rabbit by Derek Bolk, his son has autism, Asperger's, and the story is heartbreaking. On the 29th, Jean DuRocha, The Dark Paradise. And to start off February, what better than New York Times author Brian Friedman, The Crooked Street. On the 11th, I've got a panel show. One of these days you have to be on one of these because this is it's hilarious. Marcia Casper Cook, Marilyn Levinson, New York Times author R.G. Belsky, John Land, and Alan Topol. And we're going to talk about dialogue versus narrative. It should be really interesting. You never know what I'm going to ask either. Neither do they. You know, they do. And on February 13th, this is really exciting, Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child versus For the Dead, Pendergast. And I am really like, whoa, that's so exciting. So that's just January and February. And March and April and the rest of the year, you're going to have to wait because there's a whole bunch coming more. So the character that I feel sorry for Yuna is her mother. She's enough to give her grief, aggravation, and need a whole bunch of Advil and migraine pills. So why does she even bother to talk to her? And who is Chad? What role does he play before the contest? And why does Fiona's mother give us such agita, aggravation?
Well, you know, Fiona's mom is simply a fun character. She's a lot of fun to write to. And a lot of people have mentioned Nancy to me. Her name is Nancy Quinn, Fiona's mom is. And her mom is... tends to be a difficult person. She was a former literary and grammar teacher, and she is, of course, retired. And her husband, who is also a teacher, they have moved to Daytona, Florida, and Fiona bought the family home. Well, she, I think she adds a lot of character to the books that a lot of people can relate to. While Fiona loves her mom, she does have issues with her mom. Her mom can be very difficult. I didn't want to, like I told you, I wanted Fiona to be a flawed character, and I didn't want to write a family that was the Brady Bunch. You know, that everybody is sweet and kind and wonderful and nobody does anything wrong, because that's just not reality, you know. So I know that a lot of people relate with Fiona and her mom's relationship. And Chad, of course, is Fiona's younger brother. He is 3 years her junior. And Fiona and Chad have a complicated relationship. Chad likes to torture Fiona. And, of course, he's one of the brothers. He's one of those brothers that the first time he meets Nathan, of course, he decides that he's going to pull out of his hat a very embarrassing story for Fiona. And that takes place in the second book, Merry Murder. And that's, of course, at Christmas time, and everything's very complicated, and everybody's in town. Mom and Dad are in town. They show up with their five dogs. And Chad meets Nathan for the first time, and he pulls out this very, very embarrassing story mm-hmm. for Fiona. And, of course, Chad likes to torture Fiona. So, much to Fiona and Nathan and Celia's surprise as well, he shows up at the competition, at the glass slipper competition, and he is Nathan and Tavia's former dance instructor, Angela's partner. Well, of course, Fiona and Nathan and Celia are absolutely speechless. They cannot believe that Chad is at this competition because it's like Fiona says, he's never so much as gone to the prom. He never gets up and does the chicken dance at a wedding. He doesn't do it. What is he doing at a ballroom competition? And so they're absolutely shocked. And she goes and when he comes out on the dance floor, he's dancing with none other than Isadora Danza, because the ballroom competition is celebrating Isadora's 70th birthday. So she has her out there dancing with a young, good-looking man. And so Fiona goes out and starts clicking pictures of him to text to their mother. And, of course, Chad is absolutely horrified that she is going to reveal him as a ballroom dancer to his mother, because it's just going to be 20, 40, 60 questions, and he doesn't want to answer any questions. So, of course, what does Chad do but confiscate poor Fiona's cell phone? So, and there's a little bit of a struggle over that, isn't there, in the book?
I know.
Fran, are you there?
I'll tell you, the dance contest begins, and we have the mambo competition. So what happens during the mambo competition?
Well,
that was hilarious.
First of all,
they can't believe he's
They can't believe he's anywhere near a dance competition. What is this? What is Chad doing there? And they go out, and when you're at a ballroom competition, they introduce the couples. And they say, you know, Susie and Paul, and you go out onto the dance floor and you do a couple little introductory moves and you get into a pose. Well, of course, he's with Angela, the former dance instructor that was so appalled by Nathan and Tavia. So they go out there, they do these fancy schmancy moves, and they get into their pose. Then the next couple, of course, is that real old couple. And the man has two replaced knees, and the woman is practically blind, and they're really old. And they go out there, and they do a couple, you know, very simple moves, and they get into a pose. Well, now it's Nathan and Fiona's turn, and she is really hot under the collar because, first of all, her brother has confiscated her cell phone, and there he is, and she is, and this sibling rivalry competition thing kicks in. And she is like, there is no way. I am a former ballerina. There is no way I'm going to let him beat me at something I was always so good at. So she yanks poor Nathan out on that dance floor, and she tells him, let's go kick some ballroom butt. And they get out there, and they do their move, and she makes sure that they pose right next to Chad and Angela. So
all I know is that the older couple would probably beat me on a competition too.
Well, and that's the funny thing about the whole thing is
that
here's this old couple. One, the guy has two replaced knees. The woman's practically blind, and you know, so they're thinking, oh, those two people, they couldn't beat us on a, you know, with our, even if we had our feet tied together, they couldn't beat us. And so it becomes rather hilarious once the music begins.
I can picture it in my head. It's so sad. So sad, yeah. I know. So when they realize who was in the coffin, and identify how will Fiona present this to Evelyn. I mean, we're not going to say who it was, but I mean, seriously, Evelyn learns the truth. So how would if she was alive? Well, how would she have reacted to what really happened, Grandma Evelyn?
I think Grandma would have been brokenhearted over the turn of events,
mm-hmm.
But so very grateful, especially to Nathan, that you know, she never got to see those letters, you know, because the letters were delivered
mm-hmm.
years after her passing, years after Lucille's passing, and so she never got to see them. And now that they've been revealed to her, of course, we see scenes in the book where, you know, they give her the letters. Now, once again, for people who don't know anything about the Fiona Quinn mysteries, you never, never actually see Grandma Ev. She never shows herself to anything. It's not like she's a ghost that floats through the hallways and lurks in the corners. She's just a spirit. She's there. She turns the coffee pot on in the morning. She flicks on the porch light at night if Fiona hasn't gotten home and it comes in later than expected. She just kind of oversees her granddaughter. She's kind of like a little guardian grandma angel, if you will. So we never actually visually see Grandma, and I don't know if we ever will. Who knows? I just don't know. Now, sometimes Fiona, I have written her into dreams where Fiona has visualized her in a dream, but that's not the same thing. But, you know, Fiona, what does Fiona do with the Christmas card when the Christmas card comes? She takes it up to the attic, and she puts it in her grandmother's desk drawer, because in that desk drawer are Christmas cards that Grandma had collected over the years, which I do myself. I call them memory cards. They're the last Christmas card that I received from my grandmother, from my mother, from my aunts, from even my husband, Bill. I have the last Christmas card that we received from different people from his family. And every Christmas, yes, I display those cards in amongst the Christmas cards that we have. So Grandma was the same way. She had these memory cards.
Mm-hmm.
So she is depositing these cards into her grandmother's desk so that Grandma can see them. So we see scenes where Grandma is really upset by these letters, and the reason we know that is because there are teardrops on the letters. So I think that she would be very grateful to Nathan for finding out what actually happened.
All I know is that when my mother died, she didn't have cards. She had every bill from 1927 when she was born. Seriously.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, my mother had those too. Yeah.
I could not believe that, you know, it took us like a week just to get all the mail and all the letters, and then I had to go through everything to make sure that there was nothing there. But I think the funniest thing was that I found in her drawer $1,400 that she buried.
Oh, yeah.
That she didn't know was there. And then there was some other stuff that in another cabinet, and I'm going like, where did this come from? I mean, it was like unbelievable. I had no idea that anything was there. And then she had a whole bunch of jewelry, and I'm going like, where did this come from? She just buried there.
My mother's house was exactly the same way. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she hoarded
I think they kept their bills. I know in my mother's case anyway. They kept their bills in case anybody would call and say, you didn't pay your bill. They'd be able to pull that bill out. Wow, here it is right here. Unfortunately, who is going to ask you for a bill from 1965? I don't think anybody's going to, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. But they just, that's what they did. They hoarded their bills because they were afraid they would be questioned and they wanted to have proof. So,
well, I still have her Social Security stuff. I still have her stuff from when she had a home health aide. I still have all the bills inside. And my niece is a CPA, and she's a she's a treasurer of one of the school systems up here. And she said I have to keep everything for like another 6 months until it's like 8 years or 9 years, whatever it was. I go, gee, thank you so much. Here I was hoping to add it to the box of shredding. So when the final scenes play out, this scene had me hilarious. Included the waltz contest with the hysterical results. That was just so perfect. I mean, really, how did you create that? And what would Grandma Evelyn say about the results of the dance contest, the final one? That was so funny.
Well, of course, you know, like I said, when Fiona and Nathan get on the dance floor, competition mm-hmm. dance floor, with her brother and the mm-hmm. former dance teacher, like I said, all that sibling rivalry and competitive spirit just really starts pumping through Fiona's veins. And, of course, she is overcompensating this for this. And she is, mm-hmm. when she gets close enough to them, of course, she throws her hip and bumps into Chad and his partner. And, of course, they take some faulty steps that, of course, would go against them in the dance competition. Well, you think Chad's going to put up with that? I'm thinking no. So he wants revenge, so he starts going after them, and they start, the two couples, of course, start bumping into each other, and poor Nathan is like, I don't want this to happen. He's trying to pull Fiona away from this situation, and she just keeps pulling him closer to her brother and this Angela person, and of course, she ends up tripping and falling, and we won't tell you over what, and she ends up on top of Chad and Angela. Now, of course, Nathan ends up being the last man standing, and he's pretty upset with Fiona. He's not a happy camper with Fiona. And I think if Grandma Ev saw that, she would just be laughing her head off. I know my grandmother would have, you know, the real Grandma Ev. She'd have been sitting in the stands, just practically crying, laughing so hard. And so I had no trouble creating that scene because the history between Fiona and Chad. Of course, that had to go on. It just had to.
So before we end, we have about 5 minutes. What is in the future for Fiona and Nathan? What do you got planned next?
Well, I haven't quite decided. I am writing at this time book number 7, which is called Horsin' Around with Murder. And Fiona and Nathan ends up having to investigate a murder of a horse racing trainer, and as you remember, I used to write a series called the Unbridled series years ago,
yep.
which was around a racetrack, and we will return to the racetrack, and I will also be using some of the characters from that old series, Eric West and Mike West, and they will make guest appearances, if you will, in this book. And so that's the next thing they will be doing, is investigating a horse trainer's death, and of course they will be coming in contact with horses, and I plan on having that being quite hysterical when they come in contact with the horses. And I know that I won't be marrying them off anytime soon. I'm just not ready to do that. I'm not ready to do that. So
well, then she
but
would have to move, and then it would just be different. Yeah, it would be different. Then it'd be Fiona Quinn and Nathan Landry mysteries, and then
right,
this is something. Yeah.
Yeah,
Mr. Yeah.
and Mrs. Landry, Mr. I don't know what I would do with that, but I'm just not ready to do that yet. I'm just not ready.
Well, it's like Jessica Fletcher never got married either, so that made sense, too, in Murder, She Wrote.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, John Land is writing the new one. I just interviewed him with Manuscript for Murder, and he brings Jessica Fletcher into the 21st century with different technology. It's really good. So
oh, good.
Before we end, he's fantastic. So the only thing I am curious about is if Fiona actually would confront Isadora on hanging on to Nathan, I'm surprised she didn't trip her too, because I would have tripped her.
Well, you have to remember, Isadora Danza is a 70-year-old
yeah.
woman, and while she was still
yeah.
quite beautiful, you know, she was part of a murder investigation, and even though Fiona was irked by all the attention that Nathan was pretty much forced to give Isadora, she understood what was going on. And, of course, Fiona, being a teacher and having all those psychology classes that you have to go through, she, of course, mm-hmm. was the one who realized that Stockholm Syndrome was included
yeah.
in this entire situation. And, of course, Stockholm syndrome is when a prisoner or captive becomes sympathetic toward their captors and they form feelings for them. So she was the one who identified that. So, you know, I think she kept her distance, and she got in enough trouble with Chad, I thought. So so I think
I probably would have kept her. Good for her.
Yeah, she had quite restraint. She had good restraint there, I thought. Very good restraint.
So before we end, where can everybody learn more about all of your series? And I love children's books. Those are my favorite.
Well, the children's books, the George the Ponies and the Fiona Quinn mysteries can be found at my websites, of course, and that is www.georgethepony.com. And my and you can find all of my books on Amazon, and they are available on Kindle, paperback, Kindle Unlimited, and Kindle Match. So if you buy the paperback, you get the Kindle free, so you can give the paperback as a gift, maybe to your Valentine, and you get the Kindle for free, so you'll be able to enjoy the story yourself. So you give a gift, get a gift. So that's where you can find Fiona Quinn and all the other books that I write on Amazon.
Well, I'm excited because MJ12, my book, my magazine, came out on Friday. And this one is different. It's a special edition. It's for writers of all ages. We've got children from 8 to 17 that did book reviews and actually read the books.
Oh, wow.
And did good reviews. Yeah, they did. We have One River Art School right here in Westchester that sent artwork. It's beautiful. We've got my little friend Jolie Pauliano, who is the sweetest thing. She's 9 and she's in the book, and I'm going to go give her a copy of the print version because she's in there, and she wrote a whole bunch of stories. And my nephew Jake wrote something on electronics in the classroom, and a whole bunch of young people. It's ages 5 and up, all the way to adult, that these people wrote for this particular thing. Writers of all ages, MJ12, and I'm excited. I really can't wait for Maxine to finish editing my new book, Silenced Voices. I hope will be out in February. And I write my characters, they're dead. They're in the book. They tell it from behind the gravestone. Either somebody did something to them to get them there, or they deserve to be there. And they're going to explain how they got there.
Very intriguing.
And the first two stories, one is my grandmother, and she was in a Polish sterilization camp, and she's going to tell her story what she told me. And the other one is my other grandmother, who never smiled ever, and I never knew why until my cousins related the story. So they're going to learn why Bertha. And my character in my children's book is Bertha. I'm Bertha because I never smiled either. And my grandmother came to America from Russia. She didn't want to. And they sort of sold her to an aunt to work. So that's just 5. And the rest of them, the other 5 stories I made up. So, you know, if I get annoyed or something, there's a character in my mind, I just kill them off. And they tell their story. So I want to thank you so much. And whenever your next one comes out, make sure I get it. And,
absolutely, I will.
Everybody, have a great day. It's beautiful outside. I'm sorry if it's only 30 degrees. It's hot now. It got warmer. Everybody, have a great day, and bye.